Usually when you run out of data storage, the solution is, well, incredibly mundane. You just buy a bigger physical hard drive, or you ruthlessly delete old photos.
Right, or you just surrender and pay for another tier of cloud storage.
Exactly. We are completely conditioned to view data as this physical payload. We assume that a massive 4K video file intrinsically requires a massive physical footprint somewhere in a server farm to live in.
Yeah, that physical warehouse model of data.
But our sources today, which are this highly theoretical text outlining the CCT, or categorical compositional theory perspective, alongside notes for an actual working Python script proof of concept, they suggest our entire paradigm is backward.
It really is a complete rethinking of what information actually is.
And so, welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission today is a mind-bending exploration. We are looking at a theory that connects the mysteries of prime numbers, the physics of black holes, and the future of data storage.
Yeah, we're talking about shifting from that physical warehouse model to a purely mathematical one.
By the end of this deep dive, you will understand how the most chaotic numbers in math could theoretically compress our massive digital world into microscopic mathematical points.
To shrink the massive digital world you carry in your pocket into those points, we have to leverage the mechanics of singularities, which, is borrowing a concept from extreme physics.
Right, physical singularities,
That's true.
like the center of a black hole or the state of the universe right before the Big Bang. It's a coordinate where space-time curvature just breaks down.
Exactly. The information density becomes infinite, and our normal laws of physics simply stop functioning. Which brings us to a really foundational concept in this theoretical leap, the Bekenstein bound.
Right, the Bekenstein bound. Break that down for us.
So in extreme physics, the Bekenstein bound demonstrates that the entropy or the total information content of a black hole is not proportional to its three-dimensional volume.
Wait, really? Not the volume.
No, it's proportional to its two-dimensional surface area.
Oh, wow. So this is holographic compression. Instead of needing a larger 3D box to store more physical information, the universe mathematically encodes all that 3D data onto a lower dimensional 2D boundary.
Exactly. The surface is holding the reality of the volume. And that holographic principle is the exact bridge our sources use to cross over into pure mathematics.
Okay, so this is the core of it. How do we explain how prime numbers actually work as singularities for data storage?
Well, the CCT framework posits that prime numbers are the mathematical equivalent of those physical black holes. They operate as, well, arithmetic singularities.
Arithmetic singularity.
Right. In any mathematical system, primes are the coordinates where the normal rules of factorization collapse. You can't break them down anymore.
Because they're the unbreakable atoms of multiplication.
Exactly. Information density spikes because a prime is a pure quantum of multiplicative information. Any highly complex composite number is ultimately just a superposition of these arithmetic singularities.
Okay, so if physics uses the 2D surface of a black hole to compress 3D physical information, are we saying primes can act as mathematical black holes to compress our digital files?
That is the exact logical jump, yeah. Since we're treating primes as arithmetic singularities, it makes intuitive sense to just map our files directly to them.
Turn the data into primes.
Right. But our sources spend a significant amount of time detailing why that naive approach is an absolute dead end. It fails mathematically at the most fundamental level.
Why does it fail? I mean, it sounds like a good idea.
Let's walk through the mechanics of that failure because it really highlights why the ultimate solution is so profound. Think about a 1 megabyte file.
Okay, a 1 megabyte file.
To a computer, that file is just a continuous string of roughly 8 million binary ones and zeros. Mathematically, you can read that entire file as one singular, unimaginably massive base two integer.
Like one giant number. Let's call that massive number D.
Sure, integer d. And finding a prime number to represent d doesn't actually save any space.
Wait, if my file is a 100-digit number and the nearest prime is also a 100-digit number, we haven't shrunk the suitcase. We just painted a different color.
Exactly. You nailed it. If you try to find a prime or a combination of two primes that sit incredibly close to your giant integer d, those primes are going to be roughly 8 million bits long themselves.
So storing the prime takes up the exact same amount of memory as storing the original file. Where is the actual compression, zero compression, achieved?
Right, zero compression. And you run into the same Kolmogorov complexity problem if you try to store the gaps between the primes, too.
The gaps, like a treasure map.
Yeah, you might theorize that you could start at the number two and just store a map of prime gaps, the sequence of jumps required to reach your massive integer D.
Oh, I see. Just tell the computer how many steps to take.
Exactly. But the sequence of prime gaps is wildly chaotic. Storing the map of the gaps requires just as much data capacity as the original file.
Wow. So mapping files directly to primes is out. To actually achieve compression, we have to stop looking at the primes themselves.
Right. We have to look at the underlying machinery that generates them. We have to move from the physical phenomena to the invisible wave that dictates it.
Which brings us to the famous Riemann zeta function. And this is where things get really dense, so let's use a simple analogy to describe the Riemann zeta function.
I think an analogy is definitely needed here.
Imagine a giant, infinite piano keyboard. The primes are the individual physical keys you actually strike, producing a sound.
I like that.
But the Riemann zeta function is the sheet music. It's the underlying sound wave dictating the entire composition. And the most critical parts of that sheet music are the zeros.
Yes, the zeros. Those zeros are what the CCT text refers to as coupling numbers. The zeta function acts as a singularity-generating function.
So just like an ocean wave crests and falls, this highly complex mathematical function periodically hits pure zero.
Exactly. And the explicit formula in mathematics proves that the entire global infinite distribution of prime numbers is strictly encoded in the locations of those zeros.
So the primes appear chaotic on the surface, but they're perfectly governed by the underlying zeros of the zeta function. Instead of trying to shove a massive piano into our hard drive, we just need to save the sheet music.
That is a perfect way to look at it. If I have a composite number, say I'm trying to store the data representing the number 15, I don't need to store the massive prime singularities 3 and 5.
Right.
The information of those primes is actually encoded in the relative phase of the wave-like pattern of the zeta function.
We are storing the relationship between the moments of pure silence on our infinite piano.
Exactly. By focusing on the zeros, you move from storing the data itself to simply pointing to the structural address of the data within the universe's pre-existing mathematical fabric.
Okay, so now that we have our sheet music, the zeros, how does the actual compression algorithm shrink a file?
The text provides a really concrete example for this. Take a 100-digit number. First, the algorithm maps that massive integer onto a real number line and then calculates its logarithm.
So it compresses the scale.
Right. Then the algorithm consults our sheet music. It looks for the nearest zero of the zeta function, the nearest singularity, to that new logarithmic data point.
And here is where we achieve the exponential compression, right?
Yes. Instead of storing a 100-digit number, we just store the index of that zero, its rank. A tiny label stating, you know, go to the 50 trillionth zero.
And that's it, just the address.
Well, along with a microscopic residual, because your data point won't land perfectly on that zero, you store a tiny fraction in epsilon value.
Okay, so that epsilon value tells the decompressor how far to step away from the zero to hit your exact data coordinate.
Exactly. You have compressed a 100-digit payload down to an index and a tiny fraction, which is roughly 10 bits of data.
10 bits from 100 digits. That's insane. And this connects right back to the holographic principle we talked about earlier.
It really does. In mathematics, the zeros of the zeta function all sit on what's called the critical line. It's a one-dimensional boundary.
The mathematical equivalent of an event horizon. We are holographically compressing our massive data down to a single-dimensional point, like a pixel on the event horizon of arithmetic.
Precisely. Now, there is a catch with this specific index and residual method.
Hold on, yeah. Because we threw away the exact number and only kept the neighborhood it lives in. This is lossy compression, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it dangerous to lose the exact details of a file?
It is fundamentally lossy, yes. By calculating a logarithmic neighborhood and an epsilon residual, you do lose the exact original integer.
Right. So if I'm trying to perfectly reconstruct an encrypted bank ledger or a dense text file, this lossy approach introduces unacceptable errors.
Absolutely. But if we consider the reality of modern data usage, especially artificial intelligence, machine learning, and massive neural network training, you rarely need perfect integer reconstruction.
Oh, true. If you are training an AI on millions of images, you don't need every microscopic pixel perfectly preserved. You just need the overarching mathematical features.
Exactly. For pattern recognition, utilizing this naturally occurring lossy mathematical codebook is incredibly efficient.
Okay, so to prove this isn't just whiteboard fantasy, our sources actually include a working Python script, which puts this event horizon of arithmetic into practice.
Yeah, this isn't just theory. Someone built the proof of concept.
And the mechanism of that Python script is what fascinated me the most. It proves the logarithmic scaling actually works in practice. Now, it's not compressing gigabytes of data yet, right?
No, it's working with small integers, scaling numbers between 0 and 200.
Okay, 0 to 200.
And the script takes those integers and mathematically scales them to fit inside a very specific interval on our mathematical wave, the space between 14 and 50.
14 and 50. Why those specific numbers?
Because the first known zero of the Riemann zeta function sits at roughly 14.13, and the 100th zero sits around 49.77.
Ah, so the script is mapping the data directly into the neighborhood of the first 100 singularities.
Exactly. It scales the data, finds the nearest zero, and stores only two variables: the index of the zero, which it calls n, and the tiny residual distance, epsilon.
So when you run the decompression function, it calculates the location of index n as the epsilon, reverses the scaling, and boom, outputs the reconstructed data.
And the most important part, the script proves that as the input integers get larger, the size of the compressed output, the index and the epsilon, barely grows at all.
It scales logarithmically. That is literally the holy grail of compression.
It is. But this brings us to the final and, frankly, most complex leap in the sources. The text doesn't stop at lossy compression.
Right. It outlines a theoretical pathway to lossless generative compression, the ability to get your exact bank ledger back down to the exact integer without relying on lossy residuals.
But achieving lossless compression in this framework requires a major paradigm shift. You can no longer just point to a single zero and a residual.
What do you have to do instead?
You have to capture the entire informational structure of your file within the spacing of the singularities themselves. To do this, the sources introduce the concept of a random matrix model acting as the initial condition for an ordinary differential equation, or ODE.
Okay, let's break down that mechanism, because random matrix model can sound like, you know, mathematical word salad to a lot of people.
Fair enough.
If I remember my physics correctly, random matrix theory is usually used to predict the behavior of chaotic, complex systems, like the energy levels in heavy atomic nuclei. Are we thinking the math used to predict quantum chaos is being used to predict prime numbers?
Yes. And the connection between the two is one of the most famous discoveries in modern mathematics.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The statistical spacing between the energy levels of heavy nuclei perfectly mirrors the statistical spacing between the zeros of the Riemann zeta function. They share the exact same mathematical architecture.
That is wild.
So instead of storing your massive file, you map your data into a sequence of prime counts. You then use that sequence to define the parameters of a specific random matrix.
I think of it like a fractal equation. Like when a computer generates a massive, infinitely complex graphic of a snowflake, it doesn't store a giant image file of the snowflake.
Right, it just stores the rule.
Exactly. It stores a tiny, elegant mathematical rule, a seed equation, dictating how water crystallizes. The computer just runs the rule, and the snowflake grows. The random matrix model is our mathematical seed.
That's a great way to visualize it. The parameters of that matrix model represent the initial state. The decompressor then takes those parameters and feeds them into an ordinary differential equation.
And the ODE is the engine.
Right. It takes the statistical probability of where the zeros should be, based on the matrix model, and simulates their precise locations. It calculates the flow of the zeros.
So the ODE simulation generates the exact distribution of the zeros. The zeros, acting as our coupling numbers, perfectly generate the prime sequence.
Yes, and that specific prime sequence rebuilds the exact original massive integer D without a single bit of lost data.
So to unzip a file, we aren't just unpacking a box. We are literally running a mathematical simulation of the universe's prime number distribution to regrow our data from scratch.
Exactly. We are planting a mathematical seed and running a universal simulation to grow our exact file. Now, the computational power required to run an ODE simulation of zeta distributions just to open a text file is, well, it's currently beyond standard consumer hardware.
Sure. My laptop would probably melt.
Oh, absolutely. But looking at the trajectory of processing power, shifting the burden of data from physical space to computational reconstruction is a completely viable future for global data infrastructure.
If you're listening to this and looking at your phone right now, wondering how it's supposed to run complex quantum matrix models just to load a meme, remember, we're looking at the foundational blueprints for the next era of information theory.
It really is the cutting edge.
Let's take a step back and just look at the incredible journey we just took. We started with the physical limits of server racks and hard drives.
Right, the warehouse model.
and we borrowed the holographic principle from the Bekenstein bound, realizing that information can be vastly compressed if we understand its underlying geometry.
And then we moved into the categorical compositional theory, mapping physical singularities to prime numbers. We discovered that while primes themselves are too massive to use as storage, the invisible wave that generates them, the Riemann zeta function, provides a one-dimensional arithmetic event horizon.
And we looked at how a Python script successfully maps data into the first 100 zeros of that function, proving that logarithmic computational compression actually works.
Yes. And finally, we explored how random matrix models and ODE simulations could one day provide lossless generative compression, growing our data from mathematical seeds rather than storing it in physical boxes.
It really forces us to completely abandon the idea that information is a physical payload. Data is simply a coordinate, a specific resonance within a mathematical structure that already exists.
It changes everything about how we view digital creation.
Which leaves us with a truly staggering thought to wrap up on. If every piece of digital data humanity has ever created, every photo, every text message, every encrypted bank ledger can be perfectly mapped to the infinite naturally occurring zeros of the Riemann zeta function,
yep.
It implies that nothing we create digitally is actually new. All of it already exists, sitting out there in the mathematical fabric of the universe, waiting in silence. We aren't creating data, we are just discovering its address.
That is a wild concept.
Something for you to ponder the next time you clear out your cache.